Hi, this is John Wiederhorn with the MTV2 Headbangers Ball blog, and we're here today with Aaron Turner from ISIS. So how's it going, Aaron?
It's going pretty well in the midst of a number of activities as usual, but all is well.
Yeah, it seems like you're always in the midst of a number of activities, doing things with a number of different bands, doing things for your label, you know, Hydra Head. You're not a man who likes to rest, are you?
I do enjoy my peace and quiet, but I also enjoy remaining active. So as often as I can combine those two, I do my best.
Cool. The latest ISIS album that, that you guys have been working on for a while, Wavering Radiant, is coming out May 5th. Has it been a long time coming for you?
Yeah, it has. This record took quite a bit longer than any previous ISIS record, and that was mostly intentional. In the past, very often we'd tried to sort of write towards a recording deadline, and this time around we tried to take the opposite approach, where we left the end date for the recording open-ended and tried to finish the bulk of the writing before we even considered when we might actually get into the studio to make it happen.
Mm-hmm. And doing it that way, were you able to sort of maximize the creative potential of the band?
I think we were able to maximize the potential of the songs that we were working on. I think, as I mentioned in the past, having written towards recording deadlines, we may have rushed things a little bit and not been able to finesse things as much as we might have wanted. This time around, I think we really spent more time on each song and each section of each song. We recorded extensive demos, and each song probably went through at least three or four, if not seven or eight different versions before we all felt fully satisfied with it.
Sometimes, though, when you know, a band that's very experimental and that works a lot with jamming passages records too much or obsesses too much over parts, it loses the spontaneity. Was that ever a concern?
Not really. I mean, as much as some of our music may sound like the result of a session of improvisation, all of it is fairly well plotted out before we actually get into the studio. So I suppose part of the process for us has to be about spontaneity and random occurrence, but by the time a song is fully realized, it's been really carefully constructed from beginning to end. And I think that the more complicated structures that have resulted in the last two albums have been really important for us. I mean, I think, you know, maybe jamming was a successful way for us to write songs in the past, and that was the way a lot of the songs came into being. But after a while, we couldn't really we couldn't count on that being the way that each song would come into being. So, I don't know, it seemed like this time around we needed to have that extra time to put the songs together and to develop more complicated structures.
So did everyone write at home and then bring riffs and passages and fragments into the you know, working sessions?
For the most part, that was the way it worked. Yeah, everybody had some sort of seedling that they brought in off of which other elements would be built. And in some cases, there were, you know, three or four different parts that were either strung together or intended to be part of the same song that were the foundation for what, you know, finally became the full track. So, I don't know. I mean, each song worked differently, and everybody contributed to the writing process, and some songs took a lot longer than others, but overall, I'd say that we were even more meticulous, as I mentioned, in this process than we had been prior. And you also mentioned the danger of overthinking, and I suppose we could have fallen victim to that, but I think that, you know, there was always at least one or two people that was unhappy with one section of a song or another with any of our prior records, and to have a better consensus among everybody this time around, where everybody felt like we had finessed each part to the point of, well, not perfection, but total completion was really conducive to a more satisfactory record overall.
Were there certain ways that you wanted this record to be different than your last disc in the Absence of Truth?
I mean, I think we want every record we do to be different from the one that came before it. I think we've always been careful about not repeating ourselves. And so there was no specific differences that we wanted to focus on with this record, but we knew that, you know, like everything else, we just pushed ourselves forward.
How do you feel that this one is different, you know, in the long run? Not that you went into it with a plan, but certainly everything you do kind of takes shape in its own way.
Well, I think the trajectory for us has been fairly constant, where over time the structures have gotten more complex, the dynamic shifts have become stronger, the tension within each track has become heightened, often by implementing, you know, melodic stuff coupled with really dissonant or heavier stuff. I don't know. I think that one thing we relied on a lot in the past was sort of doubling up on instruments, where the guitar parts and the bass parts would all be quite parallel with each other. And this time around, and to a slightly lesser extent with In the Absence of Truth, there was a lot more interplay between the instruments, which gives it, I guess, sort of a more orchestral feel or thing like that. I guess in one way it creates more density in the music without just relying on, you know, guitars doing the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Is there any sort of a theme or a plot to Wavering Radiant?
There is, but I'm not really willing to discuss it. I'm just going to sort of sidestep that one. The main reason being that in the past, when I discussed any thematic or lyrical subjects, by the time I had done all the interviews, I had just grown tired of the subject, and it sort of severed my direct and emotional and intellectual connection to what I had actually written about. So in the spirit of avoidance of that pitfall, I'm just going to sort of defer to the listener to try to figure it out for themselves.
Okay, can you explain what a wavering radiant is?
Nope.
Okay.
I mean, to do so would be to divulge the contents of the theme. I really, like, the only thing I can suggest for people who are curious is to really listen to the album closely, examine the song titles and the artwork, discern what they can of the lyrics, and maybe from there try to draw their own conclusions.
Mm-hmm. Okay. There's a spiritual aspect, I think, to the music, and certainly that's existed probably since Oceanic. Do you consider yourself not necessarily religious, but a spiritual person? Are you sort of in touch with ethereal matters?
I'd be hesitant to define it with any sort of concrete parameters. I will say that through playing music, I've attained a different level of consciousness, which from anything I've read or heard about in terms of religious experiences comes as close to that as I can imagine. There is a sort of transcendental experience, I think, that's a very important part of our music to me. And I can't speak for the other guys in the band, because I think everybody has very different ideas about that sort of subject matter. But I will say that I think that sort of aspect of transcendence or alternate consciousness is something that perhaps we've experienced collectively and also hope to help listeners experience as well.
Yeah, it is kind of mind-altering in a sense, and I think the best experimental or psychedelic music or post-metal or rock or whatever you want to call it kind of engenders that sensation of being under the influence of something without actually taking something necessarily.
Yeah, or maybe just accessing a different part of our brain, which we aren't normally able to access through other channels. I mean, to me, it feels more like something that's already there, or an energy or a force that we're channeling rather than, an outside influence creating something else for us.
And I think people channel that part of their mind sometimes, through recreational pharmaceuticals or substances. And it's no secret that a lot of psychedelic bands have gotten inspired through the use of certain drugs. Do you find that drugs are at all a key to open those doors or past experiences with any of that stuff?
Yes and no. I mean, like a lot of teenagers, some of my most illuminating musical experiences occurred while smoking pot or whatever and listening to music. So I think that definitely had its place for me, and it had an impact. And I think there are other people in the band who have also had similar experiences where narcotics coupled with music have created some sort of really interesting synthesized experience, but a lot of our music has not been composed under the influence of any sort of narcotic, and I think that there are many ways to achieve a different type of consciousness, and drugs are only one of them.
Wavering Radiant is a very escapist kind of record that really takes you on a journey, almost like a film or at least a film soundtrack. And I think with everything that's happening, in the world and with our economy and with the chaos that constantly surrounds us, it's nice to be able to find bands like you guys and Tool and Mastodon and whoever who allow you to get immersed in their music and to really get lost in the songs. Is that an important part of the musical experience for you?
Well, again, I guess it might be sort of loosely defined as an act of transcendence where you are moving out of sort of your regular mindset into something maybe deeper. But I don't know if I would necessarily define it as escapist. I mean, without delving too deeply into it, the subject matter for the lyrics for me was very much about dealing with the realities of my own existence and maybe a collective existence as well. And some of that stuff may be existential in nature, but I think those questions are just as important as anything else. So in a way, I guess this process and this act of making music is a part of dealing directly with reality and engaging with it, but doing it on entirely different terms. So in a way, I think that making this kind of music or making music like some of the other bands you mentioned is a way of tapping into something else that is just as much an important part of our existence and our intellect as anything else. It's just a different aspect of it. And I think by delving into those things, perhaps it gives people a different perspective on how to deal with the other elements of their life. So it may be escapist, but I don't think it's escapist in the sense that, you're just completely denying the realities of life. At least that's not the case for me.
I think very often whatever is going on in an artist's life as he's writing and creating does rub off on the music or the art that he or she creates. Have there been things happening in your world, in your life that have had like a real impact on these songs and this creative process? Were there things that you can point to and say, yes, that was really instrumental in the way this album came out?
Yeah, definitely. I don't think it's just applicable to this record either. I mean, there were times in the past where I wrote lyrics for particular songs, and I thought maybe they were about one thing, and then, sometimes years later I would look back on it and realize that it was completely about something else. And it was my subconscious trying to alert me to something that was going on. So You know, I can only speak about my own personal role. I really don't know exactly how the personal lives of everyone else in ISIS affects what they do. I do know, though, that everybody puts a lot of themselves into what they do. So in that process, some of what's going on with them must inevitably end up in the music. And, you know, if you listen to our music from the beginning until now, I think you can kind of understand our trajectory as individuals. I mean, you know, when the band started and some of us were still teenagers, basically, and you hear a lot of that sort of angsty, youthful, aggressive energy. And as time has gone on, you know, the records and the songs and the overall feel of the band has become much more multi-dimensional. And I think that is a direct mirror of our own lives, where, you know, we went from this sort of very aggressive, you know, experience of youth and just trying to get everything out all at once, to really considering the totality of our beings and all the emotional dynamics that go along with that.
What have been some of the peaks and valleys that you've experienced in your life in the past couple of years?
I don't really want to get into specifics, but, you know, I would say that this has been a big period of transition for me, where a lot of my perceptions about the way things are have been completely smashed, and I've had to sort of rethink how I approach my own life and how I deal with people and how I think about things. And I think the same is true as far as my own participation in ISIS. I think, you know, writing this record was a really difficult process, but also really illuminating, and we had to work through a lot of different things personally and collectively, and I think, you know, all of those lessons have been really important. And I think the main thing that, if I could sum it all up, that I've learned is to be open to change, and that, you know, really all you can do is sort of focus your mind and your energy on making the path that you want to follow, but you also have to really recognize that there's a lot of different things that you don't expect and you can't control that are going to come your way. And if you can do your best to embrace those things, whether you might initially see them as positive or negative, the better off you're going to be.
What were some of the greatest obstacles that you faced as a band during this creative process?
I think just writing a record was a really big obstacle for us. I mean, I don't want to make it sound like it was this really horrible process, but I think there were days where all of us just felt completely discouraged and like we didn't know where to go. Part of that might be because we're so self-critical, and that anything that we wrote that sounded like something else we'd done in the past, we kind of had to scrap. I mean, we wanted to keep the essence of ISIS intact, but we didn't want to repeat anything from prior records. So it didn't feel like starting from scratch, but it did take a while to figure out where we needed to go. So that took a lot of sitting around in the space, trying different things, playing them endlessly, staring at the floor, arguing with one another, you know, spending restless nights in bed thinking about our parts and about the song. So, you know, I think that struggle is really what made the record what it is, and that the record couldn't have been made otherwise. I think we could have easily taken another route and just sort of made some sort of recapitulation of our prior records, and it probably would have satisfied a lot of people who like our music. But at the same time, for those who have appreciated our evolution and for the sake of our own artistic integrity, we felt like we really just had kind of had to take it all apart and pull it up from the ground again.
The first three songs alone on Wavering Radiant, Hall of the Dead, Ghost Key, and Hand of the Host feel like a complete listening experience. I mean, you're talking songs that are each almost, well, 9-10 minutes long, Hand of the Host being almost 11 minutes long. You know, it's by the time the third song is over, it's, you know, almost like you need a break, which is why it's kind of nice that the next track is so short. But was there an awareness of when to cut these songs off, or how long to keep them, or were you trying to create longer songs this time?
Not necessarily. I mean, part of the process for us is just keeping an open dialogue with the songs, listening to them, and sort of hearing what they suggest rather than trying to control them directly. I think, you know, we've always been more comfortable with longer track times. I think we feel like there is only so many ideas you can express in a 3 or 4 minute song, and we're just not that kind of a band. We need more space to really give a song life and feel like it's said everything that it needs to in that course. So, you know, we didn't really set out with any conscious intention to make the songs longer or shorter. We just really wanted the songs to be the best they could be individually, and also we wanted a record where all the songs fit together nicely and created a coherent whole and some sort of narrative flow from beginning to end.
Mm-hmm. With Hand of the Host especially, it's an extremely melodic number. The vocals are very mellifluous and non-edgy, non-aggressive. And I think that a lot of psychedelic metal is sort of leaning in that direction more. For instance, the new Mastodon record is just full of melodic vocals, and I'm not implying that you're following their lead at all, but it has just the screaming, you know, in excess sort of worn itself out as an expressive tool?
I don't know. I mean, I really just try to think about each part individually. I didn't go into this record thinking I needed to sing more or scream less or anything of that sort. I just, again, wanted to be open to what the songs had to say. If I felt like a part needed screaming or it needed singing or it needed nothing, I just, you know, really let that be my guide. So I guess all the singing that happened on this record was just the result of having written more melodic music. And I don't necessarily know that that was intentional either. I mean, we didn't set out to write a more melodic record. And actually, I think for the heavier or darker aspects of this album that exist, those are actually pushed further in that direction than they were on The Absence of Truth. So maybe there's just a greater contrast between the light and the dark on this record, and that's something that I think I actually really appreciate about this.
When you did Absence of Truth, you guys were on different coasts, right? With this one, you were all in L.A.?
Yep, that's the case. And I think, again, that was part of a really important part of the process for us. Not that In the Absence of Truth was sort of slapped together, but it was harder to make something that was truly cohesive when people were traveling back and forth and, you know, half the band was in one place and half was in another. It might be something that is able to work better in the future. I have a feeling that we are going to spread out again, but I think that this record, it was really important for us to all be in one place, and that it couldn't have, it wouldn't be the record it is if that had not been the case.
Mm-hmm. Did it enable you to do more recording together without, adhering to strict schedules?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, we were rehearsing 4 or 5 days a week, and we had a semi-permanent recording set up in the rehearsal space, so we didn't really have an agenda from day to day. We just went in and tried to figure out what would be the most effective use of our time, and if that meant recording a demo or another version of the same song over again, or recording a bunch of different things in one day, whether they were just bits and pieces or whole songs, or whether it was just sitting and writing one part and going over and over and over it. I think it was really important to be able to do that and just sort of take it on a day-by-day basis and let it, you know, have its own life without us trying to control it so much.
Were there any strange or surreal moments working on this record?
I don't know. I mean, I think listening back to fully completed tracks is always sort of an interesting experience. And even though we had demoed a lot of these songs, you know, a lot of the demos were just quick run-throughs with a lot of mistakes and, you know, just sketches of what the songs finally became. So to sit back and listen to the culmination of a year and a half or 2 years worth of work was kind of maybe not surreal, but certainly surprising experience. And to me, that's always one of the most gratifying parts of the process, is to sit back and listen to the initial mix of a fully completed song. It finally, at that point, really feels real somehow, and you know, you're able to finally hear what everyone else has done, and you know, that point of culmination is always really exciting for me and inspiring. And with this record, I think it was especially so, just because it had taken so long to complete.
Were there any guests on the record?
Yeah. Adam Jones from Tool did some textural guitar stuff on the first song, and then he did some sort of synthy sound effect stuff on the fourth instrumental track as well.
Do you feel a real kinship with the Tool guys?
Yeah, I mean, you know, a lot of the people that we've ended up collaborating with are people that have guested on our albums or people that we've toured with. And I think that, you know, being able to do a tour with them or with a lot of the other bands that we've developed a kinship with has been a really important aspect of making music for us. We've developed a lot of different friendships and alliances over the years, and I think those things have really been, you know, great for us on a musical level as well as on a personal level. So, you know, being able to come out to LA and develop some alliances like that, like with the Tool guys and the Melvins and Lustmord and, you know, whoever else we've come into contact with since we've been on the West Coast has been a cool and exciting part of our relocation. When we were out in Boston, it was sort of a very similar set of circumstances, just an entirely different set of people. A lot of the people that we toured with out there ended up being contributors to our previous records, and it's always just been sort of an organic process for us where we come into contact with these people, we get to know them, we sort of figure out everybody's sensibilities and just take it from there.
Now, you're sort of considered part of the post-metal scene or whatever, but back, you know, dating to the beginnings of the band, you kind of emerged more from a hardcore background, right?
Well, I guess at the time that we started, there wasn't really a post-metal scene, if you want to describe it as such. So what we did was more easily defined as hardcore, because it wasn't exactly metal. And it was certainly aggressive, but there was no other real, I guess, genre then that existed then that we fit easily into. All of us did come from a background in aggressive music, whether it was metal or in a more traditional sense, or hardcore, or the sort of late 80s to mid 90s noisier type thing, like all the Amphetamine Reptile bands. I don't know what that would be described as either. Maybe that was sort of the prototypical post-metal or something. But in one way or another, we were all certainly immersed in aggressive music, and it was that appreciation of more aggressive or heavier music that brought us together. So I guess you could say that the band was born, certainly born from those roots.
Was Neurosis the common touch point that really consolidated all of your musical interests and backgrounds and pushed you in this direction?
I would say they were one of a handful of bands. The other bands maybe being, certainly being the Melvins, the Swans, Godflesh, Helmet, all those bands were definitely heavy and had some sort of element of metal in their music, but couldn't be easily defined as such.
And what was it that took you in a more sort of mercurial direction with some of the atmospheric touches and some of the textural passages? Was it were there any bands that were important in that sort of development, or was it just a matter of playing together and learning and living?
I think it was a combination, and I don't know that there was any one artist or group of artists that we could collectively point to and say that they were the reason we started including some of those more melodic or textural or experimental elements in our music. But, I think it was everything from, early exposure to this sort of psychedelic and rock, more experimental rock aspects of like Zeppelin or Pink Floyd to maybe some much more modern avant-garde electronics people like Fenez or Tim Hecker, everything else in between. I mean, there's so many different things that the people in ISIS listen to individually that it would be hard to, say exactly where all that came from. I'm sure if you asked each of us individually, everybody would give you a completely different set of influences in terms of what they've personally brought to the band or the things that have, sort of developed their own sensibilities.
When the band was just coming together, when you were gelling and playing out and there wasn't a concrete post-rock or post-metal scene, did people immediately embrace you? Did you find that audiences were very receptive to what you were doing, or do you remember times where crowds were very dismissive?
Well, we didn't necessarily fit in all that well, and still don't to some degree. And sometimes that worked to our advantage, and sometimes it didn't. Surprisingly, when we did the tour with Soylent Green and Napalm Death, a lot of the people who were there to see Napalm Death ended up walking away being interested in ISIS. And I don't know whether it was because those were people who were sort of holdovers from the era when, Napalm Death and Godflesh did tours together, or whether it was people who just appreciated heavy music of any variety and found something appealing in what we did. But then there were other instances like, playing with Cradle of Filth and Usurper, where it was like, the whole front row turned their backs to us, and, out of a crowd of 2,500 people, we sold two T-shirts or whatever. On the opposite end of the spectrum, like a couple years ago, we played this total sort of indie pop festival in Sweden where all the other bands were like, TV on the Radio and Interpol and stuff like that, and a lot of people were really sort of taken aback by ISIS, and we felt like the odd band out, but it did actually in the end work to our advantage because we reached a lot of people who might not otherwise have been exposed to us. So our more eccentric musical personality, I think more often than not, has worked to our benefit, and if for no other reason than because we stood out on any particular bill that we happened to be playing.
Do you find it inspiring to be playing for either a hostile crowd or a crowd unfamiliar with your music?
Yeah, I mean, some of the best shows we played, I think, have been when we've played to a hostile audience, and I think there's something that's really motivating about that. I mean, you feel like if they're not going to be receptive, then you're going to do your best just to fucking smash them to pieces. So maybe those haven't been our most subtle and nuanced performances, but they've certainly been some of our most powerful and visceral, I'd say.
Back to the new album for a minute. You worked with Joe Barisi on the record. I guess he produced at Sound City with you. What was that experience like, and what did he bring to the table?
It was a completely different experience for us. We worked with Matt Bayless on the four albums before that. So Matt's methodology, in a lot of ways, was all we had known, at least in the context of ISIS. So to work with Joe was refreshing for that reason alone, that we had a different perspective that was being brought to the process. I think Matt was much more clinical in his approach, which in a lot of ways was really interesting and beneficial for us, whereas Joe was much more laid back, which was beneficial in a different way. So I don't know how to be more precise than that, except that by saying that Joe had a different approach, it ended up resulting in a different sound for the record. I think this record is a little bit, even though it's sounds like it's quite fully realized, it doesn't sound polished, and it's got a good deal of the sort of live energy that we possess that's been translated well to the recording itself, and I think that was really important for us. And I think, you know, maybe our performances are slightly different from having a different type of person at the helm also. Specifically for me, Joe was really, really laid back when it came to doing vocals, and having that more relaxed attitude for me felt really good. It felt, it felt more conducive to a good performance, I think.
Of course, in addition to ISIS, you work as the owner of Hydrahead, and it's a very exciting label. It's put out a lot of experimental albums by bands as far ranging as Torch and Five and Jesu, Lustmore, Pelican, really really diverse and inspirational kind of stuff. Is there some criteria that you have as a label owner when you're putting music out or signing bands?
Not really. I mean, I think the main thing for me is that I have to feel some really deep connection to the music, and also very often to the people who are making it. I mean, I haven't developed a personal relationship with every single artist that we've worked with, but by and large, a lot of the people that we do work with on Hydrahead were our friends prior to working together, or became so through the process. And I think that personal approach to working has been really important, both in the context of ISIS as well as Hydrahead. As I mentioned, a lot of the outside collaborators for ISIS are people we developed relationships with through the course of touring together, which obviously creates sort of a bond. And with Hydrahead, it's a slightly different situation, but through working with people in that setting, we've developed those relationships also. And so that personal element of it is certainly integral. But that aside, I think music does come first and foremost. I mean, we're not going to work with people simply because they're our friends, and we have to feel very strongly about the music in order to decide to commit our energy and resources to it. I guess I've always been drawn towards, for lack of a better word, more progressive music, and I think that is apparent in a lot of the bands that we've chosen to work with.
Has Hydrahead been a profitable venture?
Not really. It's definitely been a labor of love. I mean, we've been able to make ends meet. We've been able to cover our expenses most of the time, but really, I mean, if this were about profit, we would have given it up long ago. I think, you know, I hope that there is a time in the future where it may be more stable in that regard, but even if it isn't, I think we'll just keep doing things the way we do them. I mean, we've gotten lucky in terms of the fact that some of our bands have toured a lot and have ended up selling quite a few records, but there have been just as many or more artists who, you know, have done little to no touring and have sold few records. And, you know, none of that is really of larger consequence to us, as long as we can cover our monthly expenses and take care of the things we need to take care of and continue putting out records, then we're fine to subsist on next to nothing.
Is it difficult to juggle the band and the label?
At times, yes. Specifically, times when I'm in the studio for a long period of time or I'm on the road a lot. But the day-to-day of the label is completely handled by other people. So, in that sense, I'm not a necessary component. My energy and attention is really only required in terms of keeping up relations with a lot of the artists we work with. Handling the overall art direction of the label and doing some layout specifically, and also sort of curating the artists that we work with.
And how do you feel about the current situation within the music industry and the digital availability of sound recordings, in that artists often are no longer reaping any rewards for their music because it's being downloaded, pirated illegally?
I don't know. I mean, I have mixed feelings on the subject. I think the wide availability of music these days is great. I mean, I don't think our music would have reached a lot of the people it has if it weren't for the fact that it was easily downloadable. We've gotten emails and letters from people in Malaysia and Russia and Indonesia and all these places where, the music isn't readily available. So I would much rather people be able to obtain it that way than not at all. And I also think that for bands who tour a lot, this availability also works to their benefit, where a lot of people are encountering their music on MySpace or downloading it and, will still go to the shows and pay the admission price regardless of whether they're actually spending the money on records or not. So I think those aspects of it are great. On the flip side, I think it's really unfortunate that there's no element of surprise with records anymore. I mean, you can't release a record without people hearing it first. I mean, you can, but it's really hard to actually pull that off, especially if you're a band that's sort of playing the game in terms of actually hiring a PR person and having a label that's of any larger size. So, that loss of the element of surprise and sort of the accompanying anonymity that comes with digital downloading is sort of unfortunate. I mean, there was a time when it seemed like even if there was a lot of records that weren't necessarily that great, or were sort of disposable, you still had to reckon with the tangible artifact. The record existed as a thing that you could touch and hold and feel and had to interact with. And now it's like, so many people pride themselves on, how many gigs of music they have on their hard drive, but when it comes down to it, their familiarity with and their interest in that music is actually next to nothing. So, the fact that it's made music more disposable and more anonymous is kind of unfortunate. But the fact that it's made it more easily available and reached a lot of different listeners is pretty beneficial, I think. So, like a lot of situations, it's got its ups and downs.
Sure. If you found that Hydra Head could no longer hold its own as a label, would you start to sign 360 deals with your artists?
Probably not. I think at that point we would just throw in the towel. I mean, I don't know. We like the situation as it is now. We do things the way we do for a reason. We're certainly trying to remain adaptable and take all these new elements of music production into consideration, but if we can't offer our artists the same freedoms that they have now, and if we can't do things essentially the way we're doing them now, then it's probably not something that we would feel good about continuing to do.